verses 1 through 4. This is on page 641 in the Bibles provided under the pew. Behold my servant who I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out nor raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. He will not fail nor be discouraged, till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastland shall wait for his law.
Well, good evening. Glad to be back and have another chance for us to meet together. As Maura and Archie was talking about some of the things to do and going to school and all the children, but I have to give a lot of credit to Bonnie. She certainly keeps track of them all, and a good example is this evening we're getting ready to go, and I was doing some last-minute changes on the lesson, trying to update some of the verses. And then before I know it, Bonnie had all the kids ready and was heading out to the van with him. So it's amazing all the things that she does for us. This evening we're going to talk a little bit about spitefulness. And it's a little different from this morning in that we're focusing down kind of on one area, one topic. And so some of you may have a good grasp on what you think of when you hear the word spitefulness. But I wanted to give some examples, and we'll do actual definitions here in a moment. But I really think when we think of spitefulness, the first thing that comes as a good example is road rage and us driving. The road offers many challenges, and one of those is how we interact with each other, whether or not we're going to be spiteful. I don't know if you've ever been cut off. Maybe that gave you some urge to want to follow the person closer, or maybe somebody was tailgating you and you had the urge to drive slower just because they were tailgating you. And there's all sorts of things that we can say about driving. And really, these are all elements of spitefulness. Maybe you've been told to do something, and you had to do the opposite just because somebody was telling you to do something. My favorite is whenever you stub your toe, and then you kick the bed and yell at the bed as if it was the bed's fault. It's kind of interesting, but there's been some research looking at the genes that we have within us, trying to track down why it is we do certain things. And in mice, they found different genes that they can trigger certain behaviors. So there's a spiteful gene, there's a middle lane gene, and this is where mice that have this gene would stay in the middle of the little raceway and go slower than the other mice when they were trying to get to whatever objective they had. So they called it the middle lane gene. Now there was also a smog gene, a posh gene, even a procrastination gene. And they've all been discovered in mice, and it's a bit controversial when we start talking about how those relate to humans. And one of the concerns is if a gene is found for a certain trait, does that excuse it? Maybe does having a certain gene negate the power of the spirit to change our lives in that area? We can just say, I'm predisposed to be a middle lane person. Maybe a harder example is if we categorize something as a disease or a lifestyle, or just say that it's commonplace in our society, or call it entertainment, maybe even call it news. This is just information we're getting. Or education, does it then become accessible? And it's hard when we think about those things, but they're important to think about when we look at our behaviors and how we interact with each other. So my proposal is that we're going to continue to make discoveries in the realm of science and all the things related to it. But that kind of leads us through things that we've been tempted to do as humans for ages, is to trust in our own wisdom as man. And as Christians, we struggle to overcome the trials of our time. And I think it's beneficial to know what the trials are that we're facing. There's an expression in the military that the generals are always ready to win the last war. That means that we've seen the struggles around us, and we're prepared for them, and we can overcome those. But by the time we've mastered them, there's actually something else that we're facing. And the church can face the same or a similar situation. Maybe if we look at our elders and the teachers that we have, maybe they're fully ready for the battles of the previous generation. So it takes constant vigilance and diligence to see what it is that's challenging us today and how is it that we can overcome the temptations that are around us. So overall, this lesson tonight is a call to focus less on the challenges of the world around us and more of the challenge within us. And just like Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, one of the overarching themes is changing ourselves rather than looking at the things around us. And tonight I want to challenge myself and you to consider how it is that we can overcome spitefulness. So we'll start off with a couple definitions. First of all, not everything that we oppose should be considered spitefulness. We see examples in the Bible of indignation, maybe what we've heard called righteous indignation. An example of this would be Moses when he comes down from Mount Sinai and he sees the Israelites have made a golden calf. There's a lot of revelry going on, and he throws down the tablet. And it seems to be that was a righteous anger rather than a spitefulness. He wasn't trying to hurt the individuals. And that's in Exodus 32. Another one is in Matthew chapter 21, where Jesus drives all the money changers from the temple. See, that is a righteous indignation. There's an actual definition that a couple of them that we can look at is a feeling that we deserve something or that we're denied a right. So we thought we had something coming to us and it didn't happen for whatever reason. Maybe we thought we should have this space in front of our vehicle that nobody else could be intervening in that area, and we're denied that. An interesting one that someone's called it a willingness to harm oneself in order to harm another. And that goes back to kicking the bed when it stubbed our toe. We've already been hurt, but because we're mad at the bed, we're going to kick it. And we do that with people, which is much more harmful than kicking a bed. So it's a willingness to harm someone else, ourselves, in order to harm someone else. Some other words we may associate with it is to provoke, maybe begrudge, resentment, maybe bitterness, and even that phrase, letting anger arouse in us. So something's happened to us and it kind of gets our blood boiling a little bit. Those can be all things that can trigger and are associated with spitefulness. Eventually, if we are spiteful, that'll lead to us becoming contentious. Eventually being, I guess we might call it a cranky individual that is spiteful in a lot of circumstances. So let's look at a few biblical examples of spite. And if we look at these, it's important to note that we don't really see somebody being spiteful 100% of the time. Just like with us, a lot of times these things that happen and the things that we do happen occasionally when certain circumstances occur, and we need to realize how to respond in those. One person is Saul. When we look at his life, we see it's both an example of humility and of spitefulness. When he was anointed, we hear that Saul was ridiculed, but yet he didn't say anything. He remained, I guess we would say, meek at the moment, humble in that situation. But later on, when he was told he was no longer going to be king, that's when he became spiteful. So that goes back to that idea that we have a right, and it's being taken from us, can cause us to be spiteful. We see Moses. Moses was called the most humble man in Numbers 12, verse 3. But in Numbers chapter 20, specifically in verse 11, we see that he struck a rock. It's after years of being with Israelites as they grumbled, wanting water, wanting food, different things, and he gets angry. And he strikes a rock to get the water to come out instead of speaking to it like God commanded him. Another example in the New Testament is in Luke chapter 15, where we have the story of the prodigal son. How the prodigal son goes out, comes back, and everybody's having a feast. And the older son, instead of going in and joining the feast, he's out in the field kind of pouting. Really, he's being spiteful. And whenever the father comes out and talks to him and asks why he's doing it, he explains everything. But that's an example of being willing to harm himself. He was wanting to be excluded from the party. He wasn't going to have the feast just to make his point. And really, he was being spiteful towards his brother. So if we look at all those definitions and kind of examples that we have of spitefulness, when does it occur with us, in the church or with us as individuals? I think sometimes we can be spiteful for instruction. Maybe we've been told something. Maybe even in the worship service, maybe we hear something in a sermon, maybe something in a lesson or a class, or even just advice, maybe a rebuke, like we talked about this morning, or even just seeing someone else's mistake can lead to spiteful thoughts or behaviors. Sometimes when there's a lesson on a particular topic, are we motivated to see how it applies to us, or do we have resentment for that topic? Maybe we think that that's a little too close to home to be having that topic. I heard someone say once that that can be the danger of listening with someone else's ears. You're sitting there in the pew and they're talking about gossip or whatever it is. You're like, wow, this is exactly what she needs to hear. And you start elbowing the person next to you. That's listening with someone else's ears when you're trying to think of how it can apply to someone else instead of yourself. Proverbs 12, verse 15 says, "The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult." There's a lot that we can learn from being patient and being gracious whenever we receive correction or instruction. And so wisdom doesn't only come from our mistakes. We can learn from the mistakes that we see others make. In Matthew chapter 16, the disciples are crossing the sea in a boat, and Jesus is talking to them in verse 5. He says, "Now when the disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, 'Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees.'" So they're wondering, they're discussing among themselves, what does this mean? What does he mean we forgot bread? And so he goes there and explains a little bit more in detail. And then down in verse 12 he says, "Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And he goes through in a number of places, gives examples of what the Pharisees are doing. And he says they're right in some of their teachings on this, but they don't actually do it. And other times he says they're actually wrong in the teachings here. But the idea is that we can look at someone else and see how it affects them and learn from the mistakes that someone else makes. And as we do that, if we're looking at others and their behavior, then that kind of brings in the idea that we have to be careful that we're not judging others. We can certainly learn from others' behavior, and we can discern what's right and wrong without judging them. If we look at James chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, it says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth." So therefore, every time that we receive some sort of instruction, we really have a choice to see how it is that we're going to observe that and implement it in our lives, or to see if it applies to others. And when we do see if it applies to others, the whole listening with someone else's ears idea, really that's a form of judging and really complaining about what it is that we were instructed. Rather, we could humbly learn and see what it applies to us. In addition to the resistance to learning, it may also be that we have fight when we feel that we've been wronged. And this is really where a lot of the examples that we looked at earlier come about. This might be what we call fight for grievances. So we feel that we have an inherent right for others not to offend us, to disagree, or to make mistakes even that affect us. And if we have such an attitude, then when we are wronged, it can lead us to hold resentment towards the person that wronged us. And to change our behaviors and not do that, it takes a change in our perspective. Ephesians chapter 4 gives advice on both how to change our attitude and to change our behaviors. In chapter 4 of Ephesians, verse 29, it says, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." We talked a little bit about road rage, and I wanted to mention a little bit about it. Just to give a couple examples of how it applies to us. Bonnie is a great example of somebody who doesn't have road rage. And it's fun to be with her, watching her drive, because she genuinely has concern for someone else. So if someone cuts her off, she feels bad for them. Maybe they notice that they made a mistake, and so maybe they have that that anxious feeling that they made a mistake. Maybe they were in a hurry. She's glad they weren't hit. And she really has empathy for them, for this situation. But really, the world says that we have a right to be angry when things like that happen, and to hold others accountable for their mistakes. As we do that, it's just a change in perspective as we're interacting with people, not just with driving. If we hold people accountable for their mistakes, then we're going against what Jesus calls us to in forgiving and loving and to purge our lives from bitterness. Really, we can gain a peace from that. And just a couple examples for that. And this goes to the idea of knowing what situations challenge you beyond what you're able to readily handle, and to be able to see if you can get out of those situations. And we don't want to make things overly difficult for ourselves. An example that reminds me of that is I had an instructor once that had a long commute. It was in Oklahoma City. He had to drive from Norman, which is in the south part of the city, all the way through Oklahoma City to Edmond, which is on the north. Maybe a 25-mile drive. It takes anywhere from 25 minutes to an hour, depending on how everybody's driving. And it's notorious through there of doing a lot of construction. So the road will widen out to four lanes and come back to two lanes. Does that a couple times. I've heard people say they've worked on that stretch for 35 years straight. But there's always spots where it's coming back together. And so maybe you can visualize where lanes are merging. So you expect everybody in one of the lanes to be getting over. But there's always going to be a few people that shoot forward and try and gain a few car lengths before they get over. And it can be frustrating. And then you start seeing people get a little bit angry as they're trying to merge together. And this instructor, he said it was bad for him to have to drive that route every day because it just made him bitter by the time he got there. And one day he was driving, everybody was supposed to be merging, and somebody shot forward, passed everybody, going all the way up to try and get over. A few minutes later, whenever he gets up there, traffic going pretty slow, he realized that individual had a wreck. They got all the way up to the barrier and nobody let them in, so they got over and kind of hit somebody right at the end. And he rolled down his window and he said, "Serves you right," as he drove by. And he realized at that point is when he actually figured something else out. And they ended up actually moving to where he was closer to work. There's another individual, we just had an appointment the other day, and one of the techs there said when she's retiring, they're planning to move to Wyoming just because it's a slower pace of life. And so I give these examples to say that we need to realize what it is that sets us off on being spiteful. Maybe it's not the road at all. Maybe you have that figured out. So you should replace my examples there with something of your own that does challenge you, that gets you thinking thoughts that we shouldn't be thinking about spitefulness or resentfulness or being resentful, and seeing how it is that we can overcome those. An example that I wanted to share was about my grandpa. He was a logger, sold logs the majority of his life, and he never wanted to be wealthy, but he was always very content and felt very blessed with what he had. And so as he would sell the trees and take the logs, there would be the top that he may or may not need to cut up. But a lot of times he would go ahead and cut them up, and then he'd have a lot of firewood, and he would take it to those who needed it and were willing to accept it. And so a lot of people knew him in the area. And I wanted to tell this story that was told at his funeral. And it's told because it describes his attitude and the way he reacted in a lot of situations. He just bought a new chainsaw and was working on it at the back of his log truck. I remember when I went and stayed with him, he had a platform on the back of his log truck. And at the end of the day, he would sharpen his saw and get everything all ready for the next day. So he had his chainsaw up there, and he was sharpening it. And then when he finished sharpening it, he set it down on the ground to fill it with oil and with fuel. And while he was doing that, he got called to the house and something distracted him, so he went off and worked on it. Then later on, he came out and backed up and backed over the chainsaw with the duals of the log truck. Completely destroyed it. And getting out and never thinking a crossword, he replied, "Good thing it wasn't the only one they made." It was completely destroyed, and he later replaced it without complaining or getting angry. He had an attitude about life that being content and not getting worked up over material things was more important than anything that money could buy. And really, he was the best example of meekness of anybody that I've known. He lived out and knew well the meaning of James chapter 1, verses 19 through 21. James chapter 1, verses 19 through 21 say, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls." We have a lot of opportunities in our classes and through the lessons that we hear to have the word implanted into our hearts. But sometimes we can be a bit reluctant to fully implement it and to make the changes that are necessary. So if we have anything in us that resembles spite or resentment or bitterness, and we want to purge it, we can't just say that I'm no longer going to be spiteful. Just the way that we work as humans, we can't just take something away. We have to be able to replace it with something. And Jesus tells us what to replace it with. In Matthew chapter 5, we're called to replace it with meekness. Meekness. Chapter 5, verse 5 in Matthew says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Meekness overall is a quietness, a gentleness, and being courteous to those that are around us. It's best described with a few examples. Some of you may have heard before of the faulty attribution, maybe a faulty attribution theory or tendencies. It's a desire for us to attribute good things that happen internally. And then bad things that happen, we attribute them to something external to us. And then we do the opposite for other people. So maybe think of backing into a pole. If we're the ones that did it, we're going to say, "Wow, that pole wasn't marked very well." And we're back into it. Somebody else does it, we'll be like, "Whew, they were not paying attention." And we do that in all aspects of our lives. It's kind of faulty how we try and attribute things internally or externally. It can help us a lot to try and put ourselves in the other person's shoe and see, what would we be thinking right now if we were the ones that were in that situation? Galatians chapter 5, starting verse 22, talks about this. It says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." It was hard for me to say that without singing the song. I appreciate the puppets downstairs. Our kids, they'll go around singing the verse. And really, I didn't have all those memorized until I heard the kids singing them so much. But it's fun to hear them sing it. So in verse 23, "Against such there is no law, and those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another." So there's some interesting information that came from a study, and it was by Berkman and Stein from John Hopkins. And overall, it was about how social relationships influence human beings' death rate. We think about our interactions with each other and our death rate. So it says, "Research results strongly suggest that healthy social relationships affect the lifespan positively. In fact, those who show humanitarian tendencies, help others, are easy to get along with, and live a harmonious life will extend their life beyond those whose behavior attributes are the opposite. Surprisingly, it was also found that men's lifespan is shortened to a greater extent than those of women when no social relationships exist. It is astounding to those who are spiteful and selfish, as well as those who benefit themselves at the expense of others and are difficult to get along with, are found to die much younger than those with healthy social behavior." There's a certain peace that we can gain from not being rattled in different situations. And this research overall is a general statement. Certainly there are those with great attributes that die young, and we probably can think of individuals who've been very cantankerous or cranky and lived to very old ages. But it's a general statement about the lifespan. But really, the research is only a side effect. If we grow in the fruit of the Spirit and get rid of all things contrary to the Spirit, then we can have a more peaceful life, life more abundantly. And our life may or may not be longer, at least our earthly bodies here. The true goal and effort is to know God and to live with Him eternally. And to do so, we must look at all the examples that show us how to live a godly life, and to let our lives be molded by the Holy Spirit and not simply by what we see around us as acceptable. I'd like to turn to Isaiah chapter 42 for an idea of how we change our lives based on the examples that we see in Christ and the examples that we see from the Bible. Isaiah chapter 42, this is where we see the servant of the Lord described. In verse 1 it says, "Behold my servant, whom I uphold, my elect one, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out, nor raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastland shall wait for his law." In Romans chapter 12, it's a call for us to respond in a particular way when we're facing evil. Romans chapter 12, starting verse 17, says, "Repay no one evil for evil." That can be a hard challenge right there. When we're wrong, not to pay anyone, repay anyone evil for evil. It says, "Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine. I will repay,' says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." As we try and live this out, as we look at passages like this, it's beneficial to think about who is our enemy in these examples. And really, as we're talking about spitefulness, it's anybody that has wronged us at the moment, that we may be feeling spiteful towards. In the previous passage, and what we read earlier in Matthew chapter 5, about turning the other cheek, and the ideas presented from what we call the Beatitudes, lead us to situations where we're not going to respond as the world would respond in the same situation. We're going to do something very different. And when we act differently, then that will direct their attention to how we respond. If we react the way that they're expecting us to, really we're justifying their actions. And then we're no different from the world. We were driving down a street in Dayton here, and I feel like I have a lot of road rage examples. So we were driving down a street, and we were just going along, kind of minding our own business, and a car comes flying by us just right beside us. And then as soon as it gets in front of us, it darts over in the lane. And I think, well, that's really odd. And then just a split second later, another car comes flying beside us. And then, so everybody's kind of getting over. And it turns out these two cars, something had happened previously behind us. We don't know what happened. But here they are driving down a street in Dayton, acting like they're in go-karts or maybe bumper boats. Because they'll hit their brakes and slide, and then they were peeling out, and they were, I think one of them was trying to get in front of the other, and the other one did not want them to get in front of them. So there are these two cars, both going down this road for a good ways, until we couldn't see them anymore. And I thought somebody who's not involved in this at all is going to end up getting hurt because of this. And really, each time one of them made another action, they were justifying the action of the other individual. It really would have taken just one of them to stop and say, "This is silly," and just pull over to the side of the road, let the other one go on. But both of them striving, kind of in their competition there, is just escalating. And we can do the same, maybe not necessarily with road rage, but in discussions that we're having, in any form that we can have spitefulness towards someone, often we can see and be the one that acts differently. And when we do that, it can cause people to see, why did they act differently? What is it that causes this person to be different from those that we see in the world? We see an example of this, a call to this, to live differently than the world around us, in 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 and 9 say, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion one for another. Love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous." Many of the verses here say, "Have a humble mind." In verse 9, it says, "Not returning evil for evil, or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing." So, as we come across these situations, think of these passages, and think of it how it is that we can respond differently, and that will give us an opportunity for maybe people just to see that we're living differently, but ultimately for them to know that we're living differently because of Christ living in us. And that's where an opportunity comes to share the gospel. So, overall, in conclusion, I think it's I wanted this to be positive. I wanted it to be an encouragement for us not to have bitterness, to be forgiving, and to have the peace that comes from being meek, having the humility that we can have, and not being in such a competition that brings about spitefulness. And it is very uplifting to have the encouragement of each other, the strength that comes from knowing that others are concerned for our well-being. And that's why it's always encouraging to hear the prayer requests. As we move from congregation to congregation, often we don't know the individuals, at least when we first get there, that we hear. But just instantly, you can tell the concern that a congregation has for each other through the prayers that they have for one another and the announcements that they have in trying to help each other. And that's great to have that joy that we can have with each other. And it's all that comes from being part of God's family. And now is the time that we have, if you as an individual have decided that you want to be part of God's family, you can do that at this time as we have an invitation. Or if you have any concerns that you would like addressed and would like to speak to any of the elders, now is a perfect time to do that as we stand and sing.